Bad patient. Malpractice makes perfect. I'm Robin Donovan.
And I'm Laura Bierce.
And we are two non-medical, non-experts sifting through this week's health news.
This week's words are babies, stem cells, race, and pain.
Four uplifting topics.
Yeah.
And, Laura, tell us your uplifting news from the week.
I got a puppy.
You got a puppy!
Well, his name is Charlie, and he's the cutest puppy ever, and he's wonderful, and I love him, and he's mine, and he's my puppy.
And you also got a kitten.
And I got a kitten. Sorry, Charlie. I was petting Charlie's foot, and he did not apparently like that as much.
Is Charlie podcasting with us?
Yeah, totally.
All right. So how do you feel like your health is doing with the before and after of the puppy?
It's doing much better with the puppy, yeah. Although I'm tired because he woke up at 5 in the morning and had to go potty, and then... my husband took him out because I'm lazy.
Hey, that's a small price to pay for the epic amount of cuteness that is now a part of your life.
He's very, seriously. Very cute.
Very cute. And you got him from a shelter, right?
Yep. He's a rescue.
Yeah. So,
have your pet spayed or neutered. Thanks, Bob.
Yeah. Yeah, because your pet exists because someone didn't have their... dog spayed, and then she got pregnant, and then they decided they were going to abandon their pregnant dog. And although the outcome, you getting a puppy, is good, I would say that that is probably not ideal otherwise.
Yeah.
All right, dude, what's our first story?
So our first story comes from the National Public Radio, and it's probiotics for babies and kids. New research explores good bacteria.
Okay.
So we are looking at probiotics, which we have talked about before, how it's so not, like, super regulated, but there are small studies that have shown that it could be beneficial to kids and babies. And so it's kind of looking at that kind of thing. And whether or not it should be, like, preventative, the same way that we might give a child a multi-gummy vitamin. People are considering giving their children probiotics to help with the good gut. And there isn't really any research to support that it would be good as a preventative measure. It's been mostly being researched in small groups with for specific diseases or allergies. And the other thing is that it's not regulated, and so there's no way to know. And just the way that we would use antibiotics for a specific amount and for specific disease, probiotics should be used in kind of the same way, and it's just not there yet.
I know, and this is my whole frustration with probiotics, is they seem so promising, and yet there's, like, no information. And so we don't know, like, which of the gazillions of potential strains we should use. And, like, even this one says, you know, that it's, like, the person they interviewed literally says, it's preliminary. Oh, man. I think it's also just interesting to see that there's so many more, like, hypersensitivities, food allergies, food sensitivities, skin problems, like, cropping up. And I know that they say sometimes it's a bias of testing more and thus diagnosing more, but I feel like with food allergies that there are actually more, because it's not like, just because you don't get diagnosed with a food allergy doesn't mean you don't know you have it, right? I want to say, like, in the 50s, if you were allergic to eggs, you would have known. Or, like, you know what I mean? It's not like, oh, we just always thought, like, I would think that there's, that you would kind of know. Or I think, so I believe that there are actually, like, a greater proportion of the population having problems now. So, so do they talk at all about which ones they're using in this article?
No, I didn't see that one.
Oh, there's one paragraph. There's one paragraph that says research going back to 2009 has shown a mix of three strains of bacteria, which would be God help me. B. bifidum, B. lactis, and L. lactis. I'm not even going to, like, attempt to pronounce those, like, genus names. Given to babies who have a family history of allergic disease can help prevent the likelihood of eczema. In that study, they gave, like, basically gave moms a probiotic during their pregnancy, and then they gave the babies the probiotic during their first 12 months. Dude, I feel like I'm always on here yelling about research and stuff, but I'm such a believer of probiotics. Like, I think we're going to figure out that there's, like, some really gigantic link between not just gut health, but, like, the bacteria that populate our bodies and how we respond to our genes and our environment. I think we're going to figure this out at some point, and I think it's going to be huge, Laura. Huge.
Okay. That makes sense, because the probiotic industry is, the sales is $2.4 billion, and it's projected to be $3.1 by 2020, which is no longer that far in the fucking future.
I know. It's totally freaky that we're coming up on, like, years that I'm like, how would you say that?
Almost 18 months.
Yeah. Do you remember when it first flipped over and we were like, are we going to say 2001? Are we going to say 2001? Or, like, what are we going to say? And now I'm like, well, now it's obvious what we're going to say. But, you know, it just makes me feel kind of oldish.
Absolutely. You are absolutely oldish.
Oldish. We're middle-aged. Like, so, Medicare, Medicaid, somehow the government has us divided into categories, and 30 to 60 is middle-aged. So we've been middle-aged. I mean, I don't know you, Laura. It's been more recent. But for me, it's been several years now. Several years.
Okay.
I'm not sure how I feel about that. Overall, good. But sometimes just, like, a little bit, like, you know. I don't know. Not good. So, okay, the other thing I think is cool about this piece, and I'm steering right away from my death anxiety here, is that they talked about preemies under a certain weight, under a certain birth weight, being given probiotics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, UC Davis is California, right?
Yep.
So, and that is already a common practice in Australia, Japan, Sweden, and Finland. You know, and I think I've talked about this before, but I have this physical therapist who has multiple sclerosis, and he posted an article on his, like, Facebook page or something the other day that was, like, the other day meaning 8 months ago, that was linking MS, like, some correlation between MS and certain gut bacteria. And I also learned from him that, like, his son will have a much higher chance of getting MS because he has it. And so it just makes me wonder, like, it just feels very urgent that we kind of figure this out, because the potential implications are so large, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. That being said, I tried probiotics once, and I tried Align, which I think might be a Procter & Gamble product, and they had some kind of, like, money-back guarantee. And I remember being like, all right, here we go, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so let's just say that I got my money back. But it turned out that I had a gluten sensitivity, and so it was not like an IBS type of issue. But when I was first figuring that out, like when I was first figuring out that basically I was never going to have, like, I don't know, a really great slice of French bread or some chewy pizza or a really good donut again, like when that news was, like, heading toward me like a freight train, but the train hadn't yet, like, reached the station.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry for that, like, terrible analogy, but when I was still figuring that out, I thought, or my doctors thought, maybe it was, like, IBS or something, or they were shrugging in my general direction. And so really, I feel like my enthusiasm for probiotics is very forgiving, given that they didn't help me one little bit, Laura, not one bit.
I mean, I've never done probiotics that I'm aware of.
At least not how you say it. I haven't done them like they're drugs.
At least not intentionally or cognitively, consciously. That's probably a better word. so I can't really attest attest to it. But I do like the Activia commercials where talk about becoming more regular.
So somebody at the Sam's lady from Club,
Freaky Friday.
Oh, yeah.
Not Lindsay Lohan, but the other lady.
Yeah, no, clearly not Lindsay Lohan, because I don't think Lindsay Lohan is exactly someone who they want to be, like, promoting healthy food products right now, right? I don't even know. Is she still on drugs, or is she good now?
I don't know. I think she retired, like, 4 or 5 years ago.
From acting and stuff?
Yeah, she retired from acting.
To do meth, or, like, just in general?
No, I mean, just she retired from acting.
That's really interesting. I don't know. She was such a cute kid and then obviously has struggled. I suppose that's not really, that shouldn't be a joke, but I don't remember what I was going to tell you. Please edit this out. What, Laura, what did you just say?
I was talking about Freaky Friday and that I've never knowingly taken probiotics.
Oh, I was going to say, like, I mean, if you've eaten yogurt, like, you've been exposed to probiotics, but not Greek yogurt, regular yogurt.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever knowingly eaten probiotics.
You've never eaten a yogurt?
No.
Okay, listen. I was at a Sam's Club a while ago, and they had free samples, as they do. And I tried this Activia yogurt. No. Why else do you even go?
Bulk.
No, okay. If you can't do the gluten thing, free samples are the worst. Mm. You can almost never have them because they're like, we're having cheese samples. And the cheese is like smeared on a cracker. Yeah. So I eat it and it was horrible. I mean, and I made like a tenth of the face that I could have, right? I mean, it was like artificially sweetened, so it was like super sweet and like artificially flavored, and it was awful. And I was just like, oh man. And the woman giving it out, like I don't know, went for like a Hail Mary or something and was like, it's good for you. It's good for you. It has all sorts of healthy bacteria. And I was just like, lady, like, do you work for Danone or what? Like, I don't know. She started trying to convince me that the yogurt was like worthwhile. And I was like, you eat this stuff. Like, I don't do artificial sweeteners.
That's fair.
I don't do it. I do sugar, though, so.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's delicious.
It's delicious. All right, what else have we got?
So our next article comes from The Washington Post, and it's Miracle Cure or Modern Quackery? Stem cells clinics multiply with heartbreaking results for some patients. So I found this article very interesting because we've talked about experimental treatments and trials that people with extreme diseases that don't have any traditional FDA-approved treatments and giving them access to those things. And this is, in my opinion, one of the things that I would be afraid of that would happen is that, so if you get stem cells from your own body, they're not regulated by the FDA because they're not, it's not a drug. But there are people who are using it and are paying thousands of dollars because it's not a clinical trial to see if it works, but it's, you're paying for procedures, and some of them are having complications to them because they're not, it hasn't been a proven treatment, and they're not doing actual tests to see if this works. They're just doing shit is what it seems like. So they're making these promises that they can't back up, and they're being misleading. And so in some of these places, according to the article, they have more similar sales tactics to that you would expect in a timeshare than you would with regards to a medical procedure, where there
and you're someone who would know.
Yeah, I like timeshare presentations because I am an asshole and I don't play their reindeer games, and I will get them very frustrated very quickly. Because that's not how advocation. But I do love that $75 Visa gift card, so
yeah,
hit me up. So the treatments are not covered by insurance. Many of the clinic's patients are sick, old, or struggling with medical bills. Some of clinics are urging individuals who can't afford their steep fees, which range from $1,800 to more than $2,000, to launch GoFundMes or to take out loans. They are, they're contending that they shouldn't be, regulated by the FDA because they're not, creating a drug. They're using stem cells. But the woman that's in regards to this piece had, something, she had some kind of issue with her eyes.
Oh, I think she had macular degeneration.
Yeah. And so she got it for both of her eyes, and within a few weeks, she's now completely blind.
Yeah.
And so...
Which could happen anyway, but what I'm thinking here is that, like, some of these people are doing it as an add-on, but it sounds like the woman who is the main character in the story did it in lieu of typical conventional medical treatment. So I don't know that much about macular degeneration, but I'm guessing that there are some treatments, right? And so you're getting, it's like the biggest problem is getting this seemingly instead of other stuff.
Yeah. So they're opening these stem cell clinics. In 2009, there were two. Today, there are at least 700 and likely hundreds more because they're unregulated and they don't have to specify that none of this is regulated or based on science and any of their stuff.
So it's pretty serious. So I looked it up. In the case of macular degeneration, there are some medications that can slow the progression of the disease and like help preserve vision. So in this person's case, rather than getting the drug, she had stem cells from her fat injected into her eyes, and she was told that this could halt or perhaps even cure the macular degeneration. And then more egregious, a few days later, the clinic went onto its Facebook page and like praised her and then used her story to urge others to schedule similar treatments. And a few weeks later, her retina detached and then she went blind.
Yeah. So they said it could cure it and at worst, nothing would change. Which is not true. So visitors to the network's website who scroll down to the bottom, towards the bottom of the homepage, are told stem cell treatments is not approved by the FDA for specific diseases. If they click for details, they are told that the clinic's therapies are not offered as a cure for any condition, disease, or injury. But the website lists dozens of diseases, including congenitive heart failure, muscular dystrophy, and stroke, that the network is currently studying. Patients are charged fees for treatments in what they call patient-funded research.
Oh, no. That's just BS, right? That is just hardcore. That means we just do something experimental to you.
Yeah. So, like, while I agree with you that having access to... for diseases that are rare or don't have cures is important to allow people to be able to participate in experimental trials. The other side of that is this, I feel like, where people use correct sounding enough terminology, you know, to make them seem legitimate and put this haze over themselves that is not accurate for...
Yeah.
For it. And it's not regulated.
Yeah. And some of these clinics, the article's telling us, they're listing these procedures as studies on clinicaltrials.gov, which is I mean, honestly, if I saw something listed on that website, I would think it was legitimate. And I'm someone who has, like, covered this. Not this topic, but, like, right, I've written about some medical things or whatever. Like, I didn't know that anyone could just put a study up on that website. So, and then once they post it, and then they say, look, you're part of a clinical trial, and here's where we're listed online. And then people think that it's legitimate. So, you know what this reminds me of is, have you ever heard of platelet-rich plasma injections?
No. What's that?
Well, so it's like a concentrate derived from your own blood, and then, like, I think they centrifuge it. And so it's supposed to have, like, a greater concentration of certain growth factors. And so theoretically, it would be like your own blood concentrated in a way. And people have used it to try to speed healing from injuries. So, like, in sports medicine, or, like, for athletes, it's kind of a thing because, like, tendon injuries can be really hard to heal because there's, like, a limited blood supply, or maybe there's no blood supply. I don't know how it works. But, you know, like, areas that are difficult, types of injuries that are difficult. But there's not a lot of, like, there's not a ton of research that's been done, or, like, the research that has been done is kind of sketchy. And so, like... Like, I think the Cochrane people looked at this a few years ago and said, like, the evidence is pretty weak for musculoskeletal injuries. But it's kind of like, it's something that sounds very science-y, right? Like, in the same way that stem cells, like, it sounds high-tech. Like, platelet-rich plasma, we're going to centrifuge your blood, and we're going to remove these helpful proteins. We're going to inject them right at the site of your injury, and your body's going to heal itself. It just harnesses all these things that people identify with, and frankly, I identify with, you know, and you sell this to a population of people that are dealing with injuries known to be frustrating and lingering and difficult, and I don't know. I mean, so we still don't really know at this point, like, does that work or not? It might, and some people say that it does, but it might not, you know, and so it's a similar thing because they're using your own body's
blood,
yeah. And I've wondered about that because I've heard about it, you know, like in the context of sports medicine and stuff. And just, you know, I'm kind of watching that a little bit. I've been curious about that and the stem cell thing. Yeah, it seems so similar, but like. Seems even more snake oily to me, but I don't know. I mean, I think it also just depends. Like, is the person offering this treatment a doctor who can treat you with conventional methods? And they're saying, hey, this is experimental. Do you want to try it on top of, you know, because in this case, I think this clinic is, they're only offering this bogus thing.
Like previously, it looked like the original clinics was like cosmetic surgery kind of things, like laser and tummy tucks, and then they added stem cells, and they're just listing diseases is what it feels like. Like, oh, it could cure this, it could cure that, it could cure this, it could cure that, and it just, the research isn't there, and they're not actually conducting actual research to see if it will, and then they're charging people thousands of dollars and encouraging them to take loans out or, you know, raise the funds for it. And I just it's just, it's vulnerable people, you know,
yeah.
And it's, you know, people who are taking advantage of the ill. I think it's just kind of despicable, but it's a group of people that have been targeted by other snake oil salesmen all the time, you know, when you're desperate you're desperate. And so like, and I feel like these types of things make it harder for legitimate experimental, actually trying to help and actually doing research and trying to get it to people.
Right.
It just makes it that much harder when people with lower scruples are willing to do this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And like that's I feel like this article is very much too long, didn't read. it's quite lengthy.
It's,
but don't worry, yeah. I make up for it in the next one.
I feel like this article is worth a read, though.
Yeah, but like it's like it was able to articulate the concern that I had when you were talking about it. I was like, yeah, but like, what if someone is taking advantage of these people? But I wasn't able to articulate like that thought of like why I was like, you know, about it. Yeah. But
this is why, huh?
Yeah. So yeah, I don't think that every, you know, study is like that, and I understand like the laws, but like that's. The political person in me wants to be like, those laws should be changed, and they should be, they should make it clear. And while this isn't controlled by the FDA because it's not controlled by those laws, it's like, it's people who would do that kind of thing with it. Like, it's an experimental drug, and really it's just a placebo, you know? It's just a sugar pill.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, people have heard these terms, but they don't always know, like, even you or I, it's like, how would you know if a clinical trial is legitimate? I mean, I guess I would look to see who's running it and what their affiliation is, and I would be looking for an affiliation with a well-known medical school or something, but I don't even know. I mean, I suppose, like, pharmaceutical companies also do clinical trials, but I think you would find out about those from your doctor. So maybe the only real protection is that you're avoiding, like, people who are islands, right? Like, someone that has a clinic that's affiliated with nothing, that's like, I'm doing research, you know? Like, well, for what?
Yeah. But then also, too, the sales tactics that they use, that you have to, you know, agree to do it to get the discount, right? The first time you hear about it, right?
Yeah.
And they have highly emotional patient videos that are, you know...
yeah.
You know,
yeah, they shouldn't be probably trying, like, they shouldn't be convincing.
It shouldn't be an emotional manipulation, but that's definitely what it feels like it is.
If it feels like you're being sold a timeshare, run, don't walk. Yeah. Freaky.
All right, you ready for the next one?
I'm ready for something light, yes.
Okay, this one comes from National Public Radio as well, but it spoke to me on a primal level. And it's finally a race for the rest of us. A 0.5K in Texas includes beer, smoke breaks.
Oh, man.
The inaugural Bernie race is a 500-ish yard or 0.3 miles. The race, as it's being called, has a free pint of beer at the beginning and end. And a halfway point, if you feel like you've burned through enough of your carbs... you get a donut, caffeine hydration station, to reload right next to a costume contest in a smoking area. It's $25, which is sold out. And all the proceeds go to a charity that, tackles food insecurity by supplying weekend meals for elementary schools students who might otherwise go hungry, called Blessings in a Backpack. And if you want,
I love it.
And if you want to be an Uber underachiever VIP, you can pay an additional $25 to be shuttled across the finish line in a restored 1963 VW bus. And the VIPs get an even bigger medal because you're that important.
Oh my God.
The race is scheduled for May the 5th. And otherwise, perks of signing up include a prestigious 0.5K sticker, a medical tent that may or may not be manned. I just know, as the triathlon in you, this is something that I could maybe do, possibly, perhaps.
Okay, I do like this, and I think what I like the most about it is that it makes fun of some of the pretentious aspects of racing, because like the stickers and stuff, and I would just like to state that I do not put stickers on my car. I don't think anyone cares, and also I can't run very far, so it's really not a big accomplishment. But I like that medical tent that may or may not be manned, which frankly is sometimes the case at real races as well. No, I like this. I like this because it's a fundraiser. It's inclusive and it's funny and, you know, like, how perfect.
Yeah. I thought it was funny. And it sold out. I thought that was even better.
Even better, yeah. So they were raising money for, should we give them a shout out, Blessings in a Backpack, which is a nonprofit tackling food insecurity. You already said this, didn't you?
Yeah.
Well,
I essentially just read you the entire fucking article right there.
It was a short one. Yeah.
So if the other one was too long, didn't read, this one is very short.
Very short. We read the whole thing. I read it on the fly. So do you know how a beer mile normally works?
No, how?
So it's like, it's like on a track and you drink a beer and then you run a lap and then you drink a beer and you run a lap until you're done with four laps, and whoever like finishes first wins still. But, you know, obviously for a lot of people, four beers and, you know, like, what does it take to run a mile? Like 10 minutes or something? It's like a lot.
You are an overachiever in that statement, young lady.
Oh, well, 20 minutes, I suppose, if you're walking. I shouldn't put any limits on it. Your mile time is your mile time. I'm not running 10-minute miles right now. I'm recovering. But, yeah, dude, I don't know. I've never done it because I don't like beer, and I'm gluten-free, and I don't like beer. Not because I'm gluten-free. I just don't like beer. And then they have, like, donut ones, too, where you can eat a donut, and then for every donut you eat, you get like 30 seconds off your time. So if you eat like four donuts and you run a 10-minute mile, that's like an 8-minute mile. But I don't like I kind of just, I don't want to puke, you know.
Mm-hmm. Also, you're gluten-free.
Also, I'm gluten-free. Yeah, none of this is designed for gluten. Like, what are they gonna do? Be like, hey, Robin, if you can eat a cup of steamed broccoli, this race is yours. I would do it with, like, Dairy Queen Blizzards, maybe. No, because then you're just going to puke. I don't know. It's honestly, it's kind of a bro thing, right? Like, yeah, you chug like a beer be. And then still, and, like, that's, I also don't know if I want to feed into that part of, like, athlete culture. I want it to go the other way where it becomes more inclusive.
Yes, so.
Tangent alert.
This is your, inclusive, run. So if you want to head to Texas today.
I like it. I like it.
So our last article comes from Medium, and it's Believing Women Means Believing Their Pain. So this is an article talking about how doctors in medicine have ignored what women have said when they are dealing with pain, just kind of throughout fucking history. So, the birth control Isher is getting a, restricted in giving the rare black box warning.
Really?
Yeah. Because it's been linked. Whoa. It has received more than 26,000 complaints and reports of 8 adult deaths have been linked to the device.
Whoa, that should be this is a lot for me to say this, but forget believing women. What is going on with this device?
Yes.
I've heard of this.
It's been on the market since 2002, and despite years of women telling stories about the catastrophic side effects they've experienced, even petitioning to have it taken off the market entirely, women are still being ignored. So it's kind of connecting to the Me Too movement and believing women when they say that they were sexually assaulted or harassed rather than men. So it's just kind of talking about the fact that for much of recorded history, the doctors have ignored female complaints of pain. Like with female ailments being like fibromyalgia, and like PMS and menstrual cramps. I've been told that they were imaginary. In 2018, doctors determined that pain of cramping could be almost as bad as a heart attack. But it's something that physicians are still being taught that over-the-counter drugs like ibuprofen should be good enough to take care of.
Yeah. But there's this, but we know now that there's this huge range of things that women experience in terms of like menstrual pain and premenstrual symptoms. And it, like, for some people, it is life altering. And for some people, it's completely fine. And yeah, I actually, there's another article cited here, which was Joe Fassler, who wrote about his wife, Rachel, who had like an ovarian torsion, which means like it was like twisted somehow, I believe. And that is a piece that everyone should read. It was called How Doctors Take Women's Pain Less Seriously. It's from October of 2015. This piece, she was essentially, I mean, she was in agony, right? That she reported pain at an 11 on a 1 to 10 scale. And it was like, they did nothing. And they, I mean, they kind of harassed her and made fun of her.
Yeah, she was told, you're just feeling a little pain, honey.
Yeah. And, like, by the end, I think she's begging for them to help and, you know, and the initial doctor, like, did not actually even do an exam and...
Nope. It was, like, kidney stones. Had to be.
Yeah.
Didn't do any necessary scans. Didn't just determine that it was. So almost 30% of women who have heart attacks are initially denied medical care because their doctors don't think their symptoms are heart-related.
Yeah.
Women have different heart attack symptoms than men do.
Dude, I completely have chills right now. I don't know. I just don't know what we do, and it's just like upsetting.
And black women with
endometriosis
are more often to be falsely diagnosed with an STD.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, the whole like women dying in childbirth is absolutely a symptom of this. That it's like. Compared to other developed nations, like white women die so many times more often. And then black women in the U.S. die, you know, I think it's like 9 times more often than that. And this was just on like a podcast that I listened to for women in triathlon. And it's just, it's shocking. It's shocking because it's like we're not even providing women with a standard of care that has been established for like developed nations, right? Yeah. Like
And it's something that we have discussed, like the fear of telling the doctor that it's not like this medicine isn't working. I am having these symptoms, but being afraid of being diagnosed as hysterical or just, you know, or just making it up or just having unrealized expectations or, you know, like that I'm reporting that I am in pain is not taken seriously so that I just won't say anything, you know?
Yeah, or I will become depressed, or I will, you know, like, just live with the fact that I'm not sleeping, or, like, you know, all the ramifications,
you know, like...
Yeah, like, it's fine. And then, paradoxically, women are also seen as unreliable reporters of their own data, meaning that, like, when women report it, it's not believed. But when women don't report it, then that makes them unreliable, right? Right,
yeah. So, very much. So I really like this article because it's talking about how when we're talking about, like, we believe women in the Me Too movement, like, believe the women when a woman says that we also needs to change in another part of our society where we, in our medical field, you know?
Yeah, and it's also, like, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, like how as a society we create, it's like a setup, like we create a situation in which a person cannot succeed and then blame them for not succeeding, which, I mean, happens so much more for minorities than it does for you and I, but also happens to women more often than men. And it's like, we created a medical system where we did, for many years, the majority of research was done by men using only male subjects. And then women were treated as little versions of men, or I guess not always little, but women were just treated the same as men. And so then when women would report side effects for medications that weren't like scientifically known, or complications from procedures, or symptoms of heart attacks and serious illnesses, they weren't taken seriously because that was not established in the like scientific canon as a real symptom for the disease that they really had. So it's like we set up this whole system where we don't know as much about women as we could, and then we blame them for having, like, quote-unquote inexplicable symptoms. But, like, in so many cases, they're just responding differently.
Yeah.
Oh, it makes me so mad.
Yeah, so...
Because that should be something that, you know, like, if you go to your doctor and they're having a side effect that they don't recognize, it shouldn't just be like, this isn't a side effect. It should be like, oh, well, and you're female, so we know that we don't know everything. I mean, in some cases we have studied women, but in so many cases we still haven't. And it just...
It's just a lot. So I thought it was a good article.
Yeah, and the eSure thing is completely shocking. I had not heard about this. And I think eSure, we should say, is... I mean, they're calling it a birth control device, but it's marketed as a sterilization technique for women. So, man, I hadn't even heard about this.
Yeah.
See, and that's the other problem.
And then it doesn't get reported.
It doesn't get reported. It doesn't get in the news. Women don't know about it. And so then women are disproportionately harmed, even after we know that all this has been reported. And it should be, you know, common knowledge. So, and so then we're just relying, again, on the institution that is still falling behind on treating women to warn women when stuff like this comes up. And it's like... The system, it's just, there's a lot of room for improvement here.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Robin, so what's your current medical fascination?
Dude, I'm not fascinated by anything right now. I'm annoyed that, no, I'm not annoyed. What am I? I feel like I'm happy that a lot of things are coming to a head in terms of women, in terms of minorities, and understanding that, like, we're not hearing these voices and that we are ignoring valid, legitimate complaints and life-altering events and killings and rapes and violence and death, you know, under the guise of, like, just get along, be pleasant, da-da-da-da-da, which is really just a handle for us to, like, I don't know, leverage our own privilege to access the information that's comfortable and necessary for us and to downplay the information that's not. But, I mean, for as appalled as I can be for women like me, the truth is that, like, I'm way better off than most women, probably. I don't even know. But, like, certainly, like...
Statistically, yeah.
Yeah, like, minority women are just getting hammered, right? From every direction, it's like they can't get a break. And then we blame them, you know, for not surviving and thriving in a system that was, like, built to keep them down, essentially, you know? I mean, because if you want to look at the history of minority women in medicine, not only were they, you know, were we not, like, researching for them or believing that, or, you know, but we were actually actively testing on them, exposing them to radiation in some cases, like doing harmful medical experiments to their detriment for quote unquote the greater good. So, yeah, no, like, excuse me for not having a fascination. I'm appalled, you know? We have to do better.
Yeah, absolutely. It's called call to action.
Yeah. To just listen and, like, not ignore this stuff, to talk about these issues, even though we don't have to, you know? Mm-hmm. All right, Laura, I'm done here.
Okay. Done. Seems like enough bad patienting for 1 week.
Yeah, I'm going to go and have a deep breath over here. If you guys want to listen along, recommend the podcast to your friends, our website is thebadpatient.com. We're on Twitter at thebadpatient. You can rate, share, and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you're listening. And before we get going, we will say a special thank you to Evan Schaefer.
Thanks, Evan.
Evan composed our theme song. You can listen to his music at soundcloud.com/Evan Schaefer. Until next time, we are Bad Patient.
Malpractice makes perfect.